everyone, and welcome back to Camera Creations. It's show number 18, and we're into April. Show 18. Who'd have thought it would have got this far, eh? I'm joined today by Charlie and Ian and Chris. Hello, gents.
Hello.
Good evening.
Hello. Good evening. Oh, no, please. We were arguing about the fact that we haven't got a theme for this show in the group. And so someone came up with a bright idea of saying, let's put it out to the members of the MeWe group and let them ask some questions and we'll field their questions. So someone earlier on dubbed me Robin Day, so perhaps we'll call it Photographer's Question Time or Q&A Special or something as a theme. So it may be a short show, maybe a long show, but we will come to some nice images later on. And don't forget the link to getting to the Camera Creations shared album in Google Photos is in the show notes and on our website, which is at tedsalmon.com/Camera Creations. And also it is in the podcatcher, so you can kind of slide on in there and see what's being talked about. But all of that is for later on. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find me and all the stuff I do. And I'm hosting this this podcast as one of many we do, so head across there and check out the other ones. Right, first up is a question. No, it's not. It's a bit of feedback. It's from Rohan Moligoda, who says, on the back of the last show 2 weeks ago, I enjoyed the last podcast and loved the images in Google Photos Camera Creation Shared Album. Thank you, Rohan, on behalf of those who had them in there. I had quite a different experience when I visited Marrakesh in November 25 with my son. Not many aggressive people at all, and he wonders if it was actually because of Ramadan. I think someone actually did mention that, didn't they? This kind of negativity you got could have been a kind of religious thing, yeah?
We did have a few people say that, be careful, it's Ramadan, and they can get a bit feisty during that time.
Yeah.
But there's also other variables. He's saying, Rohan said he was with his son. We've got another friend who went with his family, and he also enjoyed it. So maybe if you've got kids in tow, they're a little bit more...
Oh, right.
Or restrained. Or maybe it's just the big cameras we're holding, puts them on edge, I don't know. But
that's assuming that his son wasn't 66 years old.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I see what you mean, though. If you've got kids, perhaps you get a different reaction. Like them coming up to you and offering to buy them.
Careful, you'll be cancelled again, Ted.
Oops.
Yeah. There might be a gap in the market for that. If you want to go on a photography kick, take a sacrificial child with you. So.
Yeah, I'm sure the people of Marrakesh are lovely, really. We've got nothing but good things to say about them, have we?
No, me and Charlie haven't.
I wonder if we've got any listeners in Marrakesh. Hello, Marrakesh. if you're listening to this podcast, we love you. We really do. Right, sticking
I was just going to jump in there and say, I think if you went with a partner, I don't think they'd be as hostile to me with a camera. I think it was the fact that we were two guys there together with cameras, and it just it wasn't the right vibe. People just didn't like us.
They thought you were
looking really blend in. That's the problem.
Yeah.
They thought you were looking for pornographic opportunities, probably.
They weren't wrong.
It was probably true, yeah. Right, sliding into our dubious title theme for the show, we'll stick with Rohan again, because he has posed a question for the panel, which is, if you had to start from scratch with photography, knowing what you know now, what would you do differently? And what would you keep the same? Good question, which I shall pose first to Charlie.
I think this is a great question, actually. This is really good. I've just noticed, looking at my notes, I put use one focal length for 2 years, and someone's written next to it, nonsense. Who's done that? The audacity.
Three guesses.
I think, like, when you're starting out, you want everything as simple as possible, okay? So I think you want a camera that's got a fixed lens. You don't even want the ability to change lenses. In my case, I made the mistake of getting the A7 C2, which is a great camera for a beginner, but it's overkill because it's got many controls. You can change the lenses. You want something that doesn't give you decision fatigue. So you want like a Ricoh or a Leica Delux 8 or something like that, something like a fixed lens. But it has to have manual controls, I would say, and it has to have a viewfinder. So I'm contradicting myself because the Ricoh obviously doesn't have a viewfinder, mm-hmm. And manual controls are kind of handicapped. But that's the first thing I would say if I was starting out again.
You can put a viewfinder on it, can't you?
I am, yeah. I mean, just because I'm a hypocrite, that doesn't really contradict what I'm saying, I don't think. But I definitely wouldn't have started with a Sony. I would have got a Ricoh, I think, if I was starting out again. And I wouldn't chase gear. I think that's a big mistake many people do. I would also delete all my bad photos as quickly as possible. You know, I wouldn't try and be a perfectionist. I would just try and get out there and take photos. And I would also factor into my camera budget. As soon as I bought the camera, I would make sure I go to a country that I've never been to before or something, just so I can practice the photography. I think if you do it in your hometown, you're just shooting things that you've seen before. So I think it's better to really start somewhere like, you know, I don't know, Japan or Bangkok, somewhere that's really good for photography for a first timer. And that will give you kind of like the impetus to kind of like push forward through all, through all the bad photos and actually carry on when you get back to the UK mm-hmm. to continue the process. That's what I did. I went to Thailand with a camera. I've never taken photos before. And I loved it. I got some good photos for a beginner. And that process just kind of led to where I am mm-hmm. today.
Okay.
Yeah. And don't buy gear. That's the number one thing.
Don't buy a camera.
Well, you need. I mean, you could start with your phone, but I don't think a phone is good.
No.
I don't think it's good for, because you need a viewfinder. And also, you're going to use manual controls down the line or something like that. So, you know, you actually need a real camera. And it could be anything, Ted. It could even be like an SLR camera. It doesn't have to be a mirrorless camera or something fancy. I mean, it could just be even, dare I say, a film camera if you're into that.
Yay.
Just anything that allows you, because it's just a tool, really. You know, it's just something that captures atoms at a certain space and time that come out as a photo. That's what it is. You know, it's an atom capturing machine. That's what a camera is. And you just want something simple, something basic that you can use.
This is why I liked the whole Fujifilm thing with the, you know, the X100 series and the X-Pro1. It was like, it felt like it had everything and it was pretty compact. And all right, it's not as compact as your Ricoh by any stretch, but it just seemed to have everything that was needed, including a viewfinder.
How much is the X100? What's the retail on that?
1600, 1500, something like that.
Yeah.
Are you serious? Yeah. That's
yeah.
a lot.
Yeah. Wow. Second hand.
And that's a fixed lens, isn't it?
It is a fixed lens. But if you buy an X-Pro 1 or X-Pro 2, 3, in fact, the Pro 4 is just about to be released. That is a bit more chunky, but you can change the lens on that. But or you can just put a pancake lens on it.
Yeah, I didn't get on with the X100, I must confess. I got it and had a play around with it, followed the don't buy gear and don't follow trends, two failures I had of getting the X100, and I struggled a little bit with it, I must confess. There was the odd good photograph, but again, for me, it didn't work for me.
I was really responding to what Charlie was saying, though, about, you know, getting something. He used the example of the Ricoh not having a viewfinder. And I was just trying to say, well, yeah, but if you just kind of a bit more careful about your choice, you can get more stuff in it. And you can then start to you know, get gears and levers and start to learn the craft from something like the X100, which I really enjoyed owning and wish I'd never sold. Yeah, sorry, Charlie, back to you.
Yeah, I was going to say it's about removing friction, isn't it? Again, you could go back to saying use your phone, but that's not the right tool for the job.
No.
Something like a Ricoh, although it's not perfect, it removes all the friction. It definitely does. It's not the perfect camera, but it's good enough. Mm-hmm. I would also add to that, when you're starting out, many people, they make the mistake of going onto Instagram or going onto these websites to have a look at photos to get a good idea. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but the thing is, what you're doing in your head is you're creating a bias and you're basically copying other people, which is a good way to learn. But I think at the same time, you need to know what a bad photo looks like. And the best way to do that is just to go onto Reddit, because there's so much crap there. There's so many photos that are bad. There's some excellent photos, but the majority of it is just rubbish. You could just go to like the street photography Reddit and just have a look through there. 99% of it is just junk. And that would give you an idea of photos that you should not capture. I think that's an excellent way of kind of training your eye and knowing what is shit and what to delete when you get to that point.
Otherwise,
you're just taking photos and you're going to think, oh, look, this is a really nice photo. And your mum and your dad would say, oh, that's a great photo. But obviously they're going to be biased.
Well, that's the point, really. When you get to these places to make those decisions, you'd need a professional with you to say, that's rubbish and that's good. That's rubbish and that's good. Because when you're starting out, you wouldn't know that, would you?
Well, you have to train your eye very quickly. I think I managed to do it myself after like maybe, I don't know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks before I went away of looking at many, many photos to try and quickly understand what was good and what was bad. I'm not saying I'm perfect. I'm certainly not. But I think very quickly I understood what a bad photo was.
Okay.
Because otherwise you're just going to spend several years of your life taking photos that are crap. You know, mm-hmm. And you don't want to waste time. You know, everything's finite. So you want to focus on taking good photos as quickly as possible. And the best way to do that is to look at and study bad photos with a good understanding of composition.
Okay, cool. What's next?
Can I jump in on this topic?
Yeah.
I think I'll probably just go through Charlie's points one at a time. I kind of disagree with... some. I mean, the use one focal length for 2 years, I mean, that's totally unrealistic. I don't think anyone's going to do that. And no one's really starting from scratch. Everyone's going to be coming from a phone where they've had a camera that does from 13mm to 70mm. So they're going to be sort of using a variable soon.
That's the problem. You want to remove any type of decision fatigue. You don't want to go, oh, do I want a 24mm? Do I want a 50mm?
It depends.
No. You want to
genre? If you're talking street, are you talking street?
I'm talking generic environmental.
If you're talking street, I agree. You should go for one focal length and you should focus on composition. If you're a landscape or a cityscape, a photographer, then you're really causing yourself a lot of problems by having a 35mm.
No, I disagree. You're the perfect case in point, because your photos are actually quite good. They're quite experimental. A lot of your photos, I've noticed, you take them from like the ground even. You put your camera almost on the ground to get those unusual angles. And I think that's what people would do. They'd be more experimental if they're shooting just with one focal length for 2 years. If you're playing about, you know, with different focal lengths that like I am or like I was in the beginning, I wouldn't be as adventurous with the different compositions.
I think a 24 to 70 will train your eye to what focal length does work for you. After 2 years, you're going to have a better idea of what focal length does work.
No, wait, that would just give you a compositional headache because you're just constantly zooming in and out and you don't know whether to shoot at 50 or 24. You just want...
Well, that's half the fun, surely.
Well, yeah, once you experience, in the beginning, as Ted said, you wouldn't know what a good photo is from a bad.
Well, I think if you are starting out, having a 35 or 50mm lens, I think you'd get quite frustrated with that and probably bored.
I completely disagree. And that's why you have to factor into your budget when you buy your first camera to go to, like, I don't know, India or Japan, a country that you've never been to before, because that will give you the motivation to carry on and take good photos afterwards. And you know that there's something there, because I can guarantee you, if you buy your first camera and you go to India, you're going to get fantastic photos when you go back to the UK. But if you buy that camera in the UK, then you go to, I don't know, Warwick or Chichester or London, your photos are going to be shit, you know, because you've never taken photos before. You've been there before. You know, you just need one focal length and you need to go to a foreign
country. But that's exactly what I did, though, Charlie. I, as you know, my first ever camera was a Ricoh.
Yes.
And it felt like a worse version of my phone in terms of it having way, way worse autofocus than the phone. I mean, you know how abysmal the autofocus is.
Yeah, the thing is,
they should be sued for selling a camera in 2026.
It's handicapped. The manual
autofocus.
Yeah. The autofocus is just
the screen. You've got no viewfinder, so you have to use a screen. I think if you're starting out, you should definitely have a camera that's got a viewfinder, because that's going to really help with the composition. So you're looking at this crappy autofocus. Tiny screen, you know, it's just way, it's just everything's worse than the phone. So it's just like,
I was just thinking, what have I done here?
But I've gone backwards.
Ignorance is bliss, isn't it? So because you're starting out, you'd be none the wiser. You wouldn't know. So maybe the
But that was my first camera, and I knew immediately that it wasn't going to work out for me. I mean, I returned it after a couple of weeks.
Yeah, but you were taking loads of photos using your mobile phone for a few years before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't doing that. I didn't take any photography, and I just went straight into it and got my first camera.
Okay.
Let's get to the. You wanted to go through the questions one by one, Chris. Okay. So carry on with that.
The don't buy gear. I kind of agree with that, and I think a lot of people do what I did, where they start with something smaller and they work their way up. I would actually recommend doing the complete opposite and spend a maximum amount of money immediately and then skipping all the middle steps. So don't do what I did. Buy a Ricoh, buy a Fuji, buy a mid-range Sony. Just skip all of that and then go straight to buying the best Sony. Yeah, but then you haven't spent the $5,000 before on all the crap. You've just gone straight to the $6,000 good stuff. You're going to spend it anyway.
Yeah.
You know, people say you have to work up, but no, I think you should just immediately buy stuff that's way overpriced, you know.
So are you saying that someone starting out should just buy a Hasselblad? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I mean, obviously it depends on the finances, but if the Hasselblad is going to be the inevitable goal of their sort of building up.
It's a £15,000 camera, assuming you get like the kit lens, if there is such a thing.
But the thing is, a few years ago, it was obvious that I was going to end up with the Sony A7R5, and I shouldn't have messed about with all the other stuff. I should have just gone straight to the A7R5.
So in answer to Rohan's question, you would have done that differently, Chris. You would have bought big to begin with, and
I would have just gone straight to the endpoint. I wouldn't have messed about with all the low end stuff. I would,
and Charlie would have kept the opposite. So the Ricoh would be first.
Yes.
Okay. So next point, Chris. Focus on shooting.
Where are we? Focus on.
Go through Charlie's list.
Oh yeah. So well, I can only speak from my experience, but coming from the phone side of photography, I was all about the editing. The editing is what really got me into taking the pictures, because I found so much creativity in what you could do with an image that's what really compelled me to sort of move on to proper cameras and sort of get more interesting and more kind of varied images. But it was the editing that really got me onto photography in the first place. I just found it so enjoyable. I was on Snapseed. I was going for every toggle, every slider, and then obviously ended up where I am now on Photoshop. So for me, just saying don't edit, I think, is a bit short-sighted, I think.
Okay.
There's a lot of enjoyment to be had in the edit.
Study other people's photos on Reddit and all that?
Yeah, I do that, so that's...
You agree on that?
Agreed.
Delete bad photos quickly.
Yes, I'm probably even more ruthless than Charlie with that.
And lean into what you enjoy, but don't pigeonhole yourself.
Yes.
Okay, so
don't worry about what other people say.
Yeah, yeah, sure. I'm going to bring in Ian here because he's not had a chance to get. I wonder if you two actually survived a weekend in Marrakesh together, the way you two seem to be disagreeing on everything.
It was siege mentality out there.
I'm going to bring Ian in here. Back to Rohan's question. If you had to start from scratch, what would you do the same? What would you do differently, Ian?
Yeah, I must confess, I disagree a little bit with Charlie that I think everybody is going to come from used to taking pictures with their phone. And there's going to be this huge drop-off. I know I experienced it from going from a phone to going to a camera, thinking that, I've got a good eye, I take good photos on my phone, and then everything shit when I take a picture on my camera. And I think, for me, it's about learning the exposure triangle is the most important thing of how to take a photograph, using those three... how those three aspects impact each other to take a decent photo. I would 100% learn that in Blighty before going off. I would hate to go off to somewhere epic to take photographs and not know how to use my camera.
So is that what you did or what you would think you should have done better?
I think that's what I did.
Right.
What I should have done better, I think, is I agree with the don't chase the kit. Don't get suckered into the YouTube thing of this new lens has come out. So I'm in between the two. One, I wouldn't have... I think when I bought my first camera, I bought a 24-70 and a 70-200. With a Sony Mark III, I think, 7 Mark III. So, and I would buy secondhand. Again, you get more for your money secondhand.
So if you had your time, so if you had your time again, you would do the same there. You'd still have bought that camera.
Yes, but right. I would have. I would have bought the Nikon. I would have evolved from where.
Yes.
Yeah, Chris is at the moment and moved on to the Nikon, I must confess. But no, I think the chasing kit, you think that getting better kit is going to get a better photograph, and I'm not sure. I think we've all taken good photos with a rubbish lens on a phone, so having something, even if it's not full frame, you're going to get a good photo, but you've got to learn how to use the camera before you do anything. And probably the last thing is really to slow down and shoot less. You get very excited about getting the shot and you want to shoot as many pictures as possible. Back to the quote about deleting bad photos quickly. It's, mm-hmm. It's think before you shoot, I think, is the other thing.
Okay. Anything else?
Yeah, if you buy Leica, don't sell it.
Yes, keep it forever.
Even if your wife says it's a good idea, don't. If you have enough money to buy a Leica, never sell it. No. Biggest learning point from me.
Okay, fair enough. Thank you very much, Rohan, for your question, and hopefully that has answered it for you. Ahmed Bibars is next, and he says, how do you make time for extensive travels given life's commitments? Coming from an ordinary working person who's got the ordinary set of life commitments, a mortgage and a job and a family and all the rest of it, I guess is where Ahmed is coming from. Charlie, you're first again. He's gone.
Yeah, no, sorry, Ted, I'm here, yes. That's a good one. I think, obviously, it depends where you are in life. I don't have many commitments, so when I travel solo. And I said in the notes here, I think if I was traveling with a family or something, it would be imperative for me to get up at like 4 a.m. or, no, 3 a.m. I'd get up at 3 a.m. in the morning, so I can go out with my tripod or whatever I'm trying to shoot. I might not need a tripod. And then I would try and be back at like 6, 7, 8 a.m. in the morning. I don't actually think for my style of photography that it would be fair on other people to take them along with me to do shoots if they weren't into photography. Even when I go out with other people, I find it difficult to shoot. I take my best pictures when I'm by myself. And I think many people would agree with me. They'd probably have to go out by themselves or have like a few hours by themselves if they're going to shoot. I think it's very difficult to incorporate family elements with photography. I think it would be incredibly difficult. I don't know how you guys feel, but for me, I think it would be almost impossible.
Okay, Ian?
Yeah, I agree with that. I've tried to combine the two and it just doesn't work. And I'm with Charlie that if you are out with family or you're away on a trip, you make a point of getting up ridiculously early, getting that sunrise, getting that time alone, which is again, I think sometimes photography is a bit like meditation. It's that mind space that you get into to see the shot. And there's nothing worse than being with someone waiting for you to finish your shot because they want to go and see something. So yeah, ring-fencing that time or don't do it at all. That's the thing, because you're only going to be frustrated.
And also, I think what Ian says is true. If you're with someone and you're traveling with them, they seem to think that, oh, look, there's your subject. Go on, go get your photo. But of course, there's more to it than that. You know, I might want to, like, drag the shutter, get the person in view, and I have like a train in the background that's got like motion blur or something. And you know, you can't do that just on the fly. You have to wait around for the elements to come together in the mix to get the composition that you want. But you know, a normal person that's not into photography won't really get that. They just think you can point your camera at something and take the picture, but that's not always the case.
And they want you to go to the cinema with them or to the cafe with them or whatever.
Yeah.
You've been up since 3 o'clock in the morning, and by lunchtime you're knackered and want to go to sleep.
Basically, yeah.
Any thoughts, Chris?
I agree. My wife's incredibly supportive and patient and understanding. And when we're out, she'll say, take all the time you want, and if we're driving, she doesn't mind if we stop and I chuck the drone up or things like that. But even then, I still feel burdensome, you know, if I'm faffing about with a tripod and doing long exposures. And like Charlie says, you might want, you know, you might be waiting for a car to be in a certain place or whatever, and you know, one photo, you know, can take an hour. So if you're on your own, obviously it's way easier and less stressful for everybody. So it is a struggle with family. So I do try and get out on my own where I can.
Yeah.
But I have got the 6 weeks in Thailand coming up with my wife. So
cool.
That's okay. More of a holiday than a photograph adventure.
Okay, we'll look forward to that for sure. Right, next up is Gareth Williams. Re-listening to the last few podcasts, I find myself noticing the amount of post-production work being undertaken. I'm a huge fan of in-camera single take. Would a show solely based around getting the shot or a one-shot wonder be of interest? So this is in response to us asking the members of the MeWe group if they had ideas for themes. So, Charlie, you're first again.
Well, getting one shot in camera. I mean, obviously you can use presets and other settings within the camera. In some cases, you can modify the preset with a Ricoh. I know it has a whole host of things where you can kind of edit before you edit. You know, you can modify the JPEG before you shoot. And I put here in the notes, I almost feel cheated in the way. You know, what's the point of taking a picture and having a preset that does all the editing for you, so to speak? It just feels like fake, you know. As Chris was saying too earlier, half the fun is actually editing the photo once you've taken it. If it's already edited, if it's baked into the camera when you take it, it just seems a bit pointless. And I think we're going to be getting to the point now with AI where it's kind of dangerous, really. You're actually going to have AI in your camera if you haven't got it already. I know obviously phones have it, but you're going to have it in full frame cameras in the future, where you look through the EV and you're actually going to have like reality augmented with whatever AI features you want in the camera before you actually take the picture. So, you know, when you take a shot, it's going to be perfect every time. But that kind of spoils it in the way, you know, you might as well use Midjourney and just, you know, generate images on your computer that aren't real. You know, you could, I think you have to set a boundary somewhere if you're going to be taking a picture and you want it to be perfect in camera. Does involve quite a lot of effort, really, up front.
I think Gareth Williams is probably a bit kind of old school like me, where he's grown up through photography with film being, you know, relatively expensive compared to digital, and you're careful about what you take, and you arrange shots before you take them, and you set things up, and the skill of photography was very much about not just firing off stuff and not just going to the computer afterwards to fix it later. It's about being able to envisage what you want to take and take it on that one frame. So I can see where Gareth is coming from. Two different approaches, two different eras, I suppose.
Definitely. I think, and it's shameful on my part, because some of my best pictures, when I look at them, I've taken like 30, 40, even 50 images of the same thing just to get the right composition. Yeah. And with film, I mean, how many pictures can you take on film? What, 30 or something? So, you know, I'd have to go through multiple film rolls, and that's just not economical, is it? I mean, it's just too expensive. No.
Which is why we have these, back in the day, we had these huge motor wines that were, you know, 250 shot rolls of film that you could put into them, particularly for sports photographers. And that's what they were doing back in the day. So, Chris, Gareth's question?
But I think if you asked me this a year ago, I would have been sort of very reticent and said no. More post-production work the better, but I'm in a bit of a techno kind of grump over the last few months, and I'm starting to sort of getting fed up with AI and fed up with too much technology interfering and everything, and I have started to think, well, maybe I want to do more sort of purist photography, if that works. And I feel like when I went to Morocco, I did mention this on the last podcast, that I kind of went to Morocco with that intention of not doing so much editing and trying to get everything done in camera.
Has Morocco converted you, your shooting style?
It's definitely, I'll tell you what I did really enjoy. Effect. And I'm going to just completely contradict the first part of the discussion, was just having one focal length, 35mm, just doing street photography and just trying to compose everything with one focal length. And it just really helped to focus and get rid of distractions. And I did all the edits that I did, there wasn't any object removal really, and the editing was fairly subtle compared to what I would normally do. So I am sort of coming around to Gareth's way of thinking and that more old school, get it right in camera. What I will say is, when people say all in camera, you see it in the PSC photos group, sort of taken on this, no edits, you know, that's not how it works. Any JPEG has been processed to death either by the phone or by the camera. The Fuji film simulations and all the equivalents on the other manufacturers, you know, those JPEGs, they have sort of exposure balancing, they lift shadows, because when you are shooting pure raw, you're going to be exposed to the highlights, you know, and you're capturing dynamic range, but it does, those photos are specifically meant to be edited. I mean, that's the whole point of the raw image from a full frame camera. And they need to be edited.
And to some degree, it was the same back in the film days, where you would buy different film stock for different effects. They had their own characteristics, and depending on what you were after, you would buy different film for that. Which kind of leads us into Ian's point, I think, about using film.
Yeah, I think I agree with both Chris and Charlie on this, and also again when you're shooting straight from the camera, there is some editing to get into that JPEG, and if you're using those film simulations, then someone's editing it for you rather than you putting your own mark on it. So that was my take, but I had a good experience last year when I bought one of these Instax Polaroid cameras, and took it away with me to Abu Dhabi to shoot the Grand Prix, with the whole thing of having 20 shots for the week. And it made me stop and think, I've got 20 shots and I want to create a documentary style set of images from that trip. And it did get me thinking, that sort of nostalgic. I mean, the pictures weren't great quality, but for me, they had a lot more feeling to them, because I had to really think before I pressed the button, rather than shooting off so many frames a second and getting one out of the 50 or something. Yeah. So again, maybe for Chris, before you go away, get one of these cameras. They cost about 40 quid or something. And just as an experience, to limit yourself on what you can print, but also you have that instant gratification because you have that picture straight away. It's tangible in your hand. It really does give you that sort of analog feel.
Yes, indeed.
I've got a question here for Chris, actually, which is related. Chris, when you look at all your work, your photos, would you say that your best work, if you had to gravitate and choose like a photo that you really liked, would it be one that's heavily edited, or would you like photos in your work that are unedited? Is there a bias there? That's what I'm trying to determine.
Probably. I think my most impressive images have been heavily edited.
Heavily edited.
Okay. Yeah, I think so. The most eye-catching, the ones that stand out, definitely. But I think you have to, if you're doing sort of landscape, cityscape kind of stuff, then...
But what I'm trying to understand is, do you like those photos for how they were actually shot in camera? Or do you prefer them because of the amount of... Because I know the amount of effort I put into some photos, it took me hours just to edit it. But really, they're just like basic photos. But I'm trying to understand, with the time cost involved, is that why you like the photo?
Yeah, I think I'm with you on that. I think the amount of effort you put into the edit, you've transformed what could be an ordinary image into something, you know, more interesting.
Yeah.
And you have to kind of divorce yourself from that, don't you? Because the amount of work you put in isn't, you know, because you could just do like a random snapshot and that's the image that everyone else will like.
Best photos of your life.
Yeah.
You know, no editing to it, but you wouldn't appreciate it as much, maybe.
No, because the amount of work you put in yourself, or even the shoot itself. Like if you get up at 4 a.m. and you put all the work in.
Yes, definitely.
You know, and you spent hours planning a shot, and then you get the shot. So for you, that's going to hold a lot more.
Definitely.
Than some image that you've just got randomly walking around.
At like a certain point in the sky and you get there on time and you took you an hour and a half to get the photo waiting around, you're going to, you know, be biased and prefer that photo as opposed to one that you took spontaneously in the street or whatever.
And those are the images where you really need someone to say, it's not that great, you know.
which brings us really nicely on to the next part of the show, which is about the ideas for themes going forward. One of the first ones came from Ian, which is about critique of images, which, as I say, dovetails into just what you were talking about. Ian, did you want to say something about this idea for a theme? Maybe not for this show, but going forward.
I always think that critique of images, and I say from going into being part of a camera club and being part of some competitions and seeing a professional judge review images, I see huge benefit from that, from people giving me ideas of what maybe they would have done differently and things like that, and just getting some feedback, to some guidance, because I don't think we never take the perfect shot. And there's always areas for improvement that will maybe train our eye for next time. So as I say, I'd love to maybe bring a couple of images per show or something like that, or even people who listen submit an image and we can give some constructive critique on that. I think
that sounds good. Yeah.
Could be quite interesting.
I agree. Do you agree, Charlie and Chris?
Yeah.
It could be fun, yeah.
We could have a little kind of a gallery and a panel and get people to submit some images.
Positive criticism.
Yeah, good idea. Well done, Ian. We shall certainly do that going forward. Charlie, you had an idea for a theme?
Well, it's not related to photography, but I guess it is. The idea of, you know, how do you put yourself out there? I recently joined Instagram, which I despise. And it's just pathetic, really, because, you drop your image in an ocean of billions of maybe trillions of images and you get like one like. And you have to ask yourself, you know, why bother? So I've been experimenting. I set up my own website, did Instagram. I've currently created a profile on Reddit where I haven't posted an image yet, but I'm, you know, commenting and communicating and liking other people's photos to get my account ready for when I post my own. I'm also on Vero and Behance, but I haven't really put much there. And also been looking into Flickr. So you've got all these different avenues where you can, you know, put yourself out there, and you have to ask yourself, you know, why? You know, I'm not doing it for money or anything. It's just something I enjoy. I enjoy taking photos. And I was really wondering what you guys think, especially Chris with Reddit, because I know he gets a lot of traction there, and how you can really build up, like, I mean, it sounds weird saying this, but building up like a buzz or a connection that people have with your photos so you get recognized, you know, because it would be nice to get recognition for the photos we take, I think. And
okay, so
maybe that could be a theme idea.
Yeah, so a theme idea, certainly, not to kind of go deeply into on this show, but quick thoughts back from Ian or Charlie? Chris?
I agree with you, Charlie, that Instagram is soul-destroying. Unless you put a huge amount of work into it and combine it with reels, and see, video content seems to be the stuff that really does get traction.
But you see, that's not photography in my mind. That's anti-photography. It's a video.
Yeah, but that's what drives. I spent a sort of couple of years on this, and it's gone up and down. Where if you put a lot of work in, you start getting a lot more likes, but where I think the interesting thing is where you can get the insights of how many people have viewed it. And that's what I recently followed Chris into Reddit. And I think Reddit is probably an area that is gives you some more visibility. And I think with the dedicated groups in Reddit, you can get a lot more traction. And I think Chris, I put one of my shots into a mobile photography one, and I was surprised on the sheer amount of views I had compared to what I had on Instagram. Mm. But I think we all just want maybe people to see our work, maybe not like it, but just so people have seen it and it's out there. But probably more over to you, Chris, on that.
As an example of the difference between Instagram and Reddit, there's one photo, the photo from Morocco, my favorite image from our trip to Morocco. So on Instagram, I posted it and it got one like. And I put it on one of the Reddit groups that I posted to. We got 149,000 views and 6,000 likes. But the difference is between Instagram and Reddit is that you don't really gain a following on Reddit. It's a one and done. You just get reactions to photographs. Rather than you actually want to grow a following, then you have to play the game on Instagram.
Right, okay. So that's something certainly we can take into account if we do this one for a theme on one show going forward, how to get recognition or how to get noticed and the tools. So hang on to those thoughts, everyone, and those examples, because that's really interesting and it will be a good way forward. So thank you, everyone, for your theme ideas, and thank you, everyone, for the questions. questions you posed for the panel. That's been really useful too, and perhaps we can do another question and answer session at some other point, but certainly to do a gallery and a critique thing, I think that was probably the best idea I thought that's come out of this. Let's get into the panel catch up, and we had something left over, Chris, from the last show which we didn't have time to get to, so do you want to mop that one up? It was all Marrakesh, yes, last time, wasn't it?
It was all Marrakesh, and I've got some deferred images from pre-Marrakesh, which is fortunate because I haven't done anything since Marrakesh. So the weekend before we went away, we had a lovely low tide sunset on Brighton Beach. I do check tide times to see if it coincides with sunset, because on Brighton Beach, when the tide is very low, you get flat sand, a very long sort of flat sandy beach out to the tide, and you get some really amazing sunsets, and it's obviously quite busy, but you get beautiful reflections on the sand, on the wet sand, and it's just a really nice evening stroll. So I always try and head down for a low tide sunset, and I got a couple of images that I'm really, really happy with. So I just wanted to share those. I did put a few in the group. And my favourite image is on the notes there, Ted. It's the first one. So you've got like a couple centre frame. And I don't normally like putting my main subject bang in the centre that often, for what was technically a street photo, I guess. But
oh, yeah. Yeah, I got you.
I kind of like this because I tried really hard, but one of my main kind of OCD elements of composition is to try and not have any overlapping people or elements, which was kind of impossible for this scene, but I tried really, really hard. I was kind of dancing around
while it's everyone else was... It's a great photo, Chris. It's really good, but there's one thing that bugs me with it. Why didn't you darken the white T-shirt on the subject?
Yeah.
That's the only thing.
It doesn't really bug me that much. I mean, I could do, I suppose. And maybe if I was sort of selling it, I would, but...
I think that's the thing with critique. It's now Charlie's mentioned it, that's all I'm looking at.
Yeah.
And I think that's the benefit of having someone mention something that, because everyone's like, it's my photo, I'm really attached to it. And but little bits that could really transform it.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, it's a fantastic photo. I really like it. It's just the white T-shirt is bugging me.
I mean, to be honest, you're right, I hadn't noticed. And now... I know you mentioned it before, and I should have edited it before I put it in here, but I thought, no.
So you're talking about, let's either have silhouettes or not silhouettes.
I think Charlie wants them completely blacked out. I don't like
doing that. I would have done
really.
It. I mean, it's a good photo. If I was editing it, I'd crush the blacks, and then I'd get a black marker, as Chris said, and paint it in over the main subject. And then
I wouldn't crush the shadows.
On my T-shirt.
Totally, but I would remove that little white t-shirt, to be fair. Yeah. So,
fair dues.
Yeah. One other thing that I would potentially do, if we're being really picky, is you've got the right-hand side, the people that are overlapping the frame. I would have taken them out because it's sort
just
of creeping
say this,
off the
this
image.
This is part of my drive not to remove images, not to remove things from my photos, so...
I see what you mean there, on the right edge.
Yeah.
I did try and crop them out by sort of cropping the image, but then the people weren't in the middle of the frame, so it was...
It's a superb shot, though, really superb.
Yeah, really interesting, isn't it? Yeah. Lovely, lovely oranges as well. The glow and the transformation of
the editing was quite minimal, to be fair, Ted. Sony cameras do shoot quite cold, so most of the colour I got back just through changing the temperature balance, the white balance.
Very nice.
Towards the warmer tones. But this was like when I was really trying hard not to sort of Photoshop things out or do too much, so that's why there's a few... There are overlapping elements that normally I would have removed, but I'm trying to sort of avoid that if I can. And the next one, I did put a few extras on the group, but the image I'm talking about here is sort of the piers coming from the left-hand side of the frame, and there's just a lady two-thirds to the right-hand side of the frame. And this is sort of half an hour or so before sunset, And I just really like the tones, and I like the vibe. And despite how busy the beach was, it feels quite sort of isolated. And I was just happy with the warm kind of glow onto the pier. So,
what's she doing?
She's walking.
That's a dress, is it? Flowing out?
Yeah.
Oh, okay, right.
Yeah, yeah. the only thing I would have done is maybe got a slightly faster shutter speed, because there's a bit of motion blur there. I don't know whether that helps or hurts the image. But
Chris, is a gradient in the sky real?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very good.
Yeah, that is. Well, you know what the sunsets are like down here.
Yeah.
You do get some good ones. So, yeah, there wasn't a whole lot of editing there. That was, just a slight temperature change, balance. Yeah. Yeah, so I could have removed all these stones as well, but
I was just going to say you've got a stone overlapping on the right hand side.
Yeah.
I actually like the stones. It makes it look like it's not AI. It makes it look real, you know.
Yeah, I like the Helter Skelter, and it's just the right amount of out of focusness, depth of field to make it kind of you can see it, but it's not. Not part of the frame, but it's part of the story. I like that, yeah.
And it's right in the centre of the frame as well, now you talk about it. It's prominent, yeah. There's probably the more you look at it, the more you see on the image, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. So that was it, really. Just wanted to catch up on that. And hopefully we'll have something more interesting with Bluebell season coming up.
Ah.
Next time.
Right, okay. Super. All right, who's next then? Thanks for that, Chris. Ian?
Yeah, for me, last 2 weeks, I took my camera out yesterday and it stayed in my bag. I made the point, we went to Southwold, which again has a very, like an amazing pier, like Brighton. It was good, but again, I was with the wife and the dog and it was too tricky to get the camera out. But I enjoyed, as I say, the last week or so, I've done some mobile photography and quite enjoyed some of the content I've got out of that. But so the other thing is really I've been doing a bit of admin. I put a couple of images together. We have I belong to a camera club and they have an inter-club competition, which last year they got their ass handed to them on. So I submitted a couple of images for that. There was one, first one was from a shoot that I did in London of some dancers for ballet in an old warehouse, which was using studio lighting it was completely out of my comfort zone. If I'd imagined a motorsport photographer taking pictures of ballet dancers, it's a parallel universe, to be brutally honest with you. But I was amazed of what you could get with lighting, correct lighting, with firing the lighting and backlighting. So I included one of the images I got from there, which was one of the dancers. I put in the unedited version and then what I edited, and I did submit that one for my LPS from that. But one other thing that was a bit of a learning curve for submitting photos is how you actually title them going into competitions and how you give it a name. So I tried to give it a little thought around what I would title the image as well. So some editing on there, obviously, a lot darker, but I think the squarer crop and her eyes looking directly at you, I was pretty happy with that image.
And the lightening up of the floor and the pulling out the textures of the floor as well.
Yeah. So just as an example, and again, probably tying back into going out and doing something that you're probably not in your comfort zone with other photographers that you'd learn off. So that was really good morning.
Cool.
Ultimately, that wasn't selected for the competition. The one that was selected was the last light on the iceberg, which was one I took from Antarctica. And this was pretty close to what was out of camera. I denoised it because it was quite noisy, but apart from that, that was it. So that was one of the images submitted on there and printed it and mounted it for the competition.
That's staggering, isn't it? It's a lovely picture.
The light was awesome, and just seeing the penguins so far away, but isolated on something that was so big, and then the mountains in the background was one of those nirvana days for shooting.
Do you want to just quickly explain to listeners about what you said about denoising it? I'm sure that I'm not the only one that wouldn't know how to do that.
Yeah, so it was quite dark because it was really at sunset, so I had to wind up the ISO on there back to the exposure triangle. So I think it was probably F11, F10 aperture, and to get the right sort of shutter speed up, I had it on auto ISO, which made it very, very grainy. But there is a sort of capability within Lightroom now that you can denoise, and it basically uses computational AI, unfortunately, to remove that grain. And it's a little bit like witchcraft. There were some programs out there that did it before Lightroom did it. I can't remember the name of those now, but I used to pay for those. And again, it does really transform an image that is like super, super grainy because if you've got that ISO up so high and brings it back in. What I might do is I'll bring the original one in that I haven't denoised. I'll put it into the folder so people could see the difference between the two.
Cool. And you got one more in there?
Yeah, so the last one is, so for this is for a competition, and then the last one is there is an annual panels competition, which is a triptych, which is three images making one image. Again, makes you think around trying to combine three images into one. So I'm in the process of looking at that. This is the one I put together last year, which was around sort of Lewis Hamilton. Quite like the black and the red. Looking at it now, I probably would have moved the left car over a little bit to give it a bit more room to breathe in the frame. But again, every time you see one of your photos, I always want to sort of change something. But I probably compensated because I got the sparks. I was more excited about having the sparks in the image than having the car in the centre of the square frame.
Cool. Yeah, it does look really nice. Any thoughts, anyone? Is anyone still here?
Oh, yeah, sorry, yes. I was going to... That's the only thing that drew me, that left car was kind of batting against the border. Obviously, all fantastic images, but I agree, that's the only thing that sort of is a slight distraction, I think. But I do love that Antarctica image. It's kind of perfect. You know, it's got that thing I love where it's kind of your eye goes through from the front to the back of the image. It's really, really good.
As a bucket list thing to do, as I say, if you ever get an opportunity or time in your life, a gap, Antarctica is epic. So I would definitely.
I presume you're stuck on a boat with a load of photographers, though. So that.
Yeah, it was an experience. So there was because they have lots of cruisers and boats. This one there was 10 professional photographers and 100 photographers. And so it was all photographers on one boat. It was quite a small boat, but it was really good because it was all photography focused. And then you ran critique in the evening, so they would review your images in the evening. So as a boot camp, it was really epic. Yeah.
Very good. I really like the ballerina photographs. I have to say, I've got a soft spot for those. I think you posted one of those into the PSC Photos group at some point in the past as well, and I got a feeling it won something, but it was very nice indeed. So well done, very good. Charlie, any thoughts?
I think all of Ian's photos are fantastic. The penguin one's very good. I actually really like the motorsport one where you have the three images below Ian. The centre one with the racing driver and the helmet, I really think that's good, where you have the depth of field and you have like the front of the car or something. I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
That's a very good image.
I would agree. Mm. And I do like what you quite often do with the pictures as well, you know, making a collage of three across, and the sort of thing you'd see on somebody's, you know, wall, presentation
stuff. Tells a story, Ted.
Yeah, exactly. And it was the same as that one that you presented to us previously, that you referenced earlier, with the Polaroid snaps, that you'd arranged and made a story out of just presentation. And it's really, really artistic and nice. So yeah, good stuff. Right, okay then, thanks for that, everyone. Chris, rumors and news, let's end there, shall we?
Okie doke. Big news, big new rumor dropped today. This is going to come as a shock to Charlie, because the camera that we both have, the Sony a7r5,
releasing a new one.
Yeah, it's we're going to be obsolete.
Oh my god! Is this hang on a minute? Is this an April Fool's? Is this
no? I had to double check. It's April the 2nd. Chuck it in the bin. Chuck mine in the tip. Because in May the Sony A7 R6 will be coming along.
This is terrible.
It hasn't got the 100 odd megapixels that was rumored. So this looks a bit more sensible. Only 67 megapixels. And the main sort of upgrades it's going to be a stacked sensor apparently, or maybe partially stacked, which means it will be a whole lot quicker. They're talking at 30 frames a second in electronic mode. I imagine it will still be 10 to 15 in mechanical shutter mode. And it's also borrowing the A7 5's kind of, they do like a exposure merging, so you get really good dynamic range and better ISO performance. You get 16 stops, which I think is a stop improvement on ours, but it's all immaterial. To be honest, we're not going to notice any difference when it comes to the images. The only thing that I would like is that it's going to have the new larger body. That appeals to me. It probably wouldn't to you, because I think you'd rather have a smaller body. So it does look a lot nicer to hold in terms of ergonomics, but joking aside, I'm not too tempted by this. I don't know whether you would be, Charlie, just to get the latest.
I don't really see, I mean, unless you're shooting like events or something, I don't see what advantage that would give me or you, this camera.
No, not for what we do, you know, for landscapes or street or anything, you know, an extra 20 frames a second isn't really going to help.
No, and I don't actually destroy our storage. The megapixels, it's only a small upgrade, like 5 megapixels more. I don't actually want any more megapixels, because the editing, once the raw file gets to a certain size, you need a new computer, you know, just because of the size.
Yeah, so you pay for the camera, then you've got to buy a computer to go with it. So.
Basically, yeah.
But this is big news. This is Sony's like flagship stills camera, so, you know, I'll be interested to see what they try and sell it for and what other new features they come along with. But I think,
is there any thoughts on price range? Is it like 3.5 or 3K, yeah, something like that?
I reckon four. There's no rumors on the pricing, but the A12's 6.5, I think, and the A93's 5.5 or 6. So yeah.
What was the 5 on release price?
3.5. I think you bought it on release, didn't you, Ian? The A7R5.
Yeah, I think it was. I got it on import. I think it was under 3. I paid for it.
Yeah.
But back to Charlie's point with the, from memory, it was 50 megapixel. But it just, I had to buy more hard disks That was the problem. So it wasn't just buying the camera. You had to buy the storage to house all of the images that I didn't want to throw away. So,
yeah. Ian, what happened? You shoot Nikon now, so you got rid of your Sony.
Yes. So I took the A7 Mark V to Antarctica, but I was sitting down with another photographer, and he was in the media center, and he was saying, "Oh, you don't often see someone shooting Sony for motorsport." I was like, "Yeah, yeah." And we and he was shooting Sony, and he had a Nikon, and he was comparing how sharp they were on pans, and I did notice a marked difference in sharpness. And again, it could be down to my skill, but it definitely prompted that.
Is there like a brand loyalty in motorsport where you have to shoot with Nikon, otherwise you're not a professional motorsport shooter?
I think it's still very Canon focused, but I would say it's Canon Nikon mainly. I mean, most of the, I say the professionals would be on Canon or Nikon. I wouldn't see any of the professionals.
I think Sony's calling the wildlife market, probably.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I think the issue with Sony is their telephoto lenses are pretty poor, the first party ones, compared to Nikon and Canon. I mean, the 100 to 400's ancient, and that is rumored to be coming out along with this camera, the 100 to 400 f4 constant aperture. And that is in desperate need of an upgrade. So maybe they're trying to win back the pros with a faster camera on the high resolution side. So.
But I did notice my excuse and the selling point was that it was slower because of the 50 megapixel. It was a slower camera than the Nikon, and I did notice as soon as I went to the Z8 a marked difference. But if I was just doing landscapes and using it how I was before, I did more motorsport professionally, I don't think it would have made a difference to me. I think it's a real niche of why Nikon fits with me better for the sort of the high speed photography. But
yeah, well, you learn what you need as you go, don't you? That's the other thing we're talking about earlier. It's like, obviously you've got all the knowledge to know what camera does suit you best.
I mean, if it works for you, that's all that matters, really.
Yeah,
you
know.
Yeah.
It's just a tool at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's just an extension of what you use, of what you see. So, yeah, 100%.
Okay. That's the only rumour. And there's one bit of news. There isn't much news going on the first start of this year. But there was a story from a couple of weeks back. Adobe are constantly pushing the AI envelope, for better or worse. And there was some features that have rolled out into the beta of Photoshop, where they're trying to sort of promote this AI assistant and this kind of natural language kind of editing process. So I'll just quote the Petapixel article. It's saying, so in regards to this new AI assistant update, using AI assistant in Photoshop is as simple as describing that it's you want. Removing distractions, changing backgrounds, refining lighting or adjusting color. Users can then decide if they want the AI assistant to automatically make the requested edits or instead show the user a step-by-step guide to achieve the desired results. The second option, if executed well, could have educational benefits as Photoshop has a fairly steep learning curve. Now, I know Charlie and I know you, Ian, as well, probably appreciate the learning curve is very steep. But there's a reward to that, I think.
And yes,
there is. I don't know how to feel about this because, like, with a flick of switch, like Adobe have undone like 3 years of me staring at YouTubers telling me how to do things with Photoshop, and they've mentioned this. You know, if executed well, there'll be educational benefits. But why would you need to know how to do it if an AI is going to do it for you?
Well, this is it. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, you're an elitist. You know how to use Photoshop. Not many people know how to use Photoshop. And Adobe are basically breaking down the walls and saying, you know, we're anti-elitist now. We want to be democratic. We want everyone to have access to Photoshop, which is a lovely idea. But it means, what if you just, you know, spent 3 years watching YouTube videos learning how to use Photoshop for? I mean, you know, it's
just a waste. And the other thing, this is like a broader AI issue, is that why would if anything is instantly achievable and accessible, then why would you even do it in the first place?
It's exactly, just
degrading everything, isn't
There's
it?
No scarcity, is there? It's there for
everything. Like, oh, I've got this image, I really want to edit it and make it look nice. And you just think, what's the point? What is the point? Because I can just chuck it at Photoshop and go and make this look nice. And then you think, well, why do I even take the photo in the first place? You know, I think this is really going to destroy, like, creativity in so many different ways.
You get to the point where you have, like, you know, a man with a 40-year-old male going to Hong Kong with a £5,000 camera to get, like, a picture from, you know, the harbour, and then, like, a 16-year-old girl just taking the same picture on her phone, and they're just talking to, like, Photoshop AI.
Yeah, exactly.
Doing the same edit, and then you just feel worthless because you spent all that money.
But the aim point is that neither of you will bother taking the photo in the first place, because you know that afterwards you're just going to stick it into an AI.
Exactly.
And it's going to be a worthless image. So why? I don't know. I'm quite worried about it.
Yeah, yeah, because it's like an abundance of choice, isn't it? Everything's done for you. Yeah. You need scarcity to kind of appreciate the work you put into it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I don't know whether we're explaining ourselves adequately, Ian. Maybe you can chime in what you think.
I think it's all the process. Back to this thing of going out ridiculously early with your tripod, having that time alone, composing it. I think that's, I mean, you're getting an end product at the end of the day, but I think that's part of the hobby anyway, isn't it? It's what you get out of it, of living and experiencing, taking that shot, what the environmental factors were around you when you took it. It means something to you, regardless of how AI has edited it, but you still have that connection to that time that you took to spend on that image, or the time it's taken you an hour of editing through Photoshop. You're already connected. You own that. That's your image. I don't know.
And also, I might jump in there, Ian, and say, like, it's not a question of, oh, this is the location of the image, this is where I have to go at this time of day to get the image. No, because you can get there and the weather could be wrong. So there's a degree of chance of you getting the correct image. You can't just rock up there and get the image and go. There's usually more, what I'm trying to say is there's more variables involved. You could get there and it could be crowded with people, then you have to wait for the people to go so you can get the image you want. There's many parameters there that kind of like upset the image of being good or bad. And I think AI is quite scary in that regard, because it's just removing all of that, for better or worse.
There's also the issue of somebody just said that there's someone stood there with a £5,000 camera and someone else with a Instamatic. And there's also the enjoyment in the hobby of the hardware, that the person that stood there with a £5,000 camera might just adore that camera and love it, and just the ownership of it is, regardless of taking photographs, part of the hobby surely is to be able to enjoy the hardware, the gear, as we've spoke about on the show before, whereas the person stood there with an Instamatic camera couldn't give two stuffs and probably chucks it away afterwards.
Definitely. It's a tactile experience having a £5,000 camera in your hand. It's enjoyable to use, you know, it's like a toy, but it's also a tool. Obviously I use a phone to take photos all the time, but it's quite different, like tapping like a glass screen. It's not the same.
No.
You have control, but it's not perfect. A camera's better. It's just the UI on the phone's better, but I prefer a real camera, a full-frame camera.
Yeah. I think it's just okay to enjoy hardware, is what I'm trying to say. And
yeah, but I think we're losing that now with AI and kind of like where technology's going.
My message, though, I think, to the person stood there out there and this conundrum going through their head possibly, is don't worry about it. Enjoy your hobby and enjoy your camera and enjoy your lens and just enjoy what you're doing. Don't worry about the next person creating the same thing with AI. Just do what you're doing.
I guess what I you
remember
say
those
is
words, great. Ted. When me and Charlie are in the forest at 4 o'clock in the morning next weekend, taking pictures of bluebells.
Yeah, Ted's assuming that we take photos in vacuums. Though I think we compare ourselves to others when we take photos. So I will always be aware of the fact that there's someone with a phone editing using AI, and that's going to make me feel less of a photographer going forward.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, well, thanks very much, Chris, for the rumours and news and those interesting things coming along. I think we're about done now. We'll be back in 2 weeks' time. My vote for the theme on the next show, you probably have guessed already, is to try and do this critique thing. I really like that idea. We could put it out to the MeWe group at least and ask people to submit photographs, and we could throw them in the shared album for next show. And actually do that, you know. Is everyone going to be around for the next show?
Yes, I will be.
In 2 weeks' time?
Yes.
Yeah, we're all around. Is everyone okay with that? Should we try doing that?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yep.
Yeah,
sounds good.
Yeah, I think that's a really good idea that Ian came up with, so well done to you. Okay, we'll be back in 2 weeks' time then with that, and I'll put some notes in the next day or two in the group in MeWe to let people know how to do that and what to do. TedSalmon.com/camera creations is our website. MeWe group is where it all happens. The shared album in Google Photos will be linked all over the place, so you can get to that. TedSalmon.com is where you'll find links to all the other stuff we do, all the audio podcasts, all the MeWe groups. Do come and join the ones that you haven't done already, and we'll take it forward from there. So thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you all again in a fortnight. Bye for now.